We're holding on your test on the days, the Mishnah. Mishnah says, a shechet menach tzadin. If a person shechts through the side of the neck, as we're going to go on to say, shechita is supposed to be done on the front of the neck. The first thing that you hit once you get through the skin on the beginning of the muscles is the first thing you should be hitting is the two simonim, the windpipe and the esophagus. But now you shechted from the side of the neck. Shitasik shader, then that shita will still be kosher b'di'evin. Now Rashi and Tosfos discuss. We're going to bring up a point in the Gemara about where exactly are the simonim relative to the rest of the structures in the necks in the neck. So, in other words, when you're shechting from the side, you're first cutting through a fair amount of muscle before you get to the simonim. Now, Rashi learns that it means that when we say shtetasim sheira, it actually doesn't mean only b'diyevet, even though the word hashochet often means only b'diyevet, as we had earlier in the parrot. But over here, it actually means, Rashi says, even if it's chila, it would be fine. The only reason why it says this word hashochet is because the next thing in the Mishnah is going to be hamoylik, where in fact it's possible, so it uses hashochet for parallelism. Tosfos says that no, it actually may mean only b'diyevet, and it would mean even if. Now we're going to talk about in the Gemara. It's possible to massage the simonim a little bit, or the windpipe and the esophagus, and move them to the side. It's possible. We'll talk about moving them all the way to the back. In the case of a bird, in the case of an animal, at least it's possible to move them over to the side to like sort of press against them and then force them. I mean, they're held in place by ligaments and whatnot, but to a certain amount, so to a certain extent, there's flexibility in their placement, so it is possible to get them closer to the side. Nevertheless, Tosfos says it would still only be the other, because what if you didn't do that? So according to Rashi, what we're saying over here is l'chatchila, and according to Tosfos, only be the other. Next, Mishnah continues. On the other hand, if you do malika from the side of the neck of the animal, then it would be possible, because malika dafka has to be on the back of the neck and not anywhere on the sides, as we will see in the Gemara. The Mishnah continues, if he shechts on the back of the neck, then the shechita is completely possible, because what you have is you're cutting through the spine and the spinal cord before you ever reach the simonim. So by the time you reach the simonim, the animal has already become trefo, even as we'll talk about in the Gemara Nevela, because you cut through the mafrekas, the spine. So Rashi points out the Gemara, we're going to learn in the Gemara that there can be a case, again, where you move the simonim behind there, and then b'di'evet, then b'di'evet can be kosher, because at least then you did shecht the simonim before you reached the spine. Rashi also points out malika is different, because the whole process from beginning to end is malika, so it's no different. Rashi says the same way, for example, consider a hole in the esophagus makes the animal terefa. Nevertheless, when you're shechting, you cut through the esophagus, you cut more and more, and that doesn't make it terefa, obviously. It's all part of the process. So the same way over here, when it comes to malika, it's all part of the process to cut through the spine and only then reach the simonim. But when it comes to shechita, then it's not so. With that said, though, we are going to learn in the Gemara a little bit today, more tomorrow, Bez Hashem, that maybe, in fact, with malika, you do have to be careful not to, even if you're cutting through the spine, fine, but at least not cut through most of the muscles over there before you reach the simonim. But if you shecht from the back, then it would be possible, because again, then you're cutting through the spine before you ever reach the simonim, and by the time you reach the simonim, then the animal is trefo or even nevela. Now again, if you move the simonim there, then that's different. We'll talk about that in the Gemara. On the other hand, but if you do malika from the back of the neck, then it's kosher, it is kosher, but yeah, that is the way malika is supposed to be done. But again, since we said the word hashoshet, then we use hamoylik together with that as well. So hashoshet and hasaver. Now on the other hand, when you shecht on the front of the neck, shritosik shera, then that's a kosher shritta, and that's in fact the way shritta is supposed to be done. Hamurluk when that's saver, malikosik psula, but if you do malika from that side, then it's possible, because the Torah insists that it has to be the odor at the back of the neck. Nimsa, so it comes out, kosher the shritta, possible the malika. So the bottom line is, it comes out, the area of the neck, which would be kosher for shritta, the front of it, and the diyevit, maybe the sides, or according to Rashi, maybe even the fill of the sides is possible for Malika. On the other hand, the part that's kosher for Malika, only the back of the neck, possible the shita, that area would be possible. That area would be possible for Malika. What we're going to include with that, what that would be possible for shita. What we're including with that point, we're going to see in the Gemara. But this is an example, in other words, of you have two things that each one has its place, and there's no overlap between them. There's nothing that you can say that's kosher by both of them or possible by both of them. It's where one ends, the other one begins. The following Mishnayos in our parak, then after this, are going to go through similar things as far as other areas of halacha. Where we find similar kinds of things, where you have something, starting with Daf Beis, which is the next Mishnah, we're going to have examples like that, other examples like that in Halacha, where you have two things that are disjoint, and what's kosher by one is possible by the other, and vice versa. So the Gemara starts off my Odef. When we're talking about over here Odef in the Mishnah, and we're saying that if you shech from the Odef would be possible versus when you do Malika on the Odef, it's kosher. My Odef. What do you mean by the word Odef over here? You mean my Odef mamish? Do we actually mean what's usually defined as the Odef, which would be the back of the neck, in particular the upper part of the back of the neck, which is directly opposite the face? If you're going to say that that's what it means, then the question is, my area shirsa. Then why are you Dabkin mentioning that if a person does shchita over there, it would be possible? I feel like murdered nami. Then shouldn't you say that also malika over there would be possible? Mul orpoi omer achmana v'loy orpoi, because the Torah says that malika has to be done mul orpoi. The word mul often means opposite. The word mul often means opposite, so the Gemara is assuming that mul orpe means what's opposite the orif. And in that case, then doing malika on the orif itself would be possible. So what do you mean? That the Mishnah is saying that malika there would be kosher. Ela my orif means mul orif. Rather, that's what it means. Say orif in the Mishnah. What we really mean is what the Torah calls mul orif. So in other words, it's mul doesn't mean opposite. It means next. As the Ritzvah points out, they have a concept which we're going to learn at the end of our Masechta called the Shon Torah Lachud or the Shon Chachamim Lachud. Many times we have the wording, the terminology that the Torah uses and that the Chachamim uses are different. And here we have the same kind of thing. The Torah calls it Mul Oref. The Chachamim, maybe precisely because the word Mul is a little ambiguous, just call it Oref. But that's what it actually means in our Mishnah. It means the back of the neck opposite the face. Kidkotani Sefer, as in fact the Sefer of the Mishnah continues, Kola Odef, Koshon Malika, or the Sefer meaning, in our Mishnah, what we said, I think I skipped a line actually, we said that Shekola Odef, Koshon Malika, I skipped a line in the Mishnah, Shekola Odef, Koshon Malika, Bechola Tzaba Koshon L'Shchita. The entire Odef is Koshon for Malika, the entire front of the neck is Koshon for Shchita. And then it came out, as the Mishnah had said, that you have what's Koshon by Shchita is possible by Malika and vice versa. So the Mishnah had actually spelled out and said Kola Urif, Karshala Malika. So therefore, so Mul Orfer in the Pasuk doesn't mean opposite the Urif, as in some place opposite it, it means that the entire area, it means the entire area of which is called the Urif, the back of the neck. As the Gemara is going to go on to point out, it means basically any area that would be in the neck that would be valid for shita, where we've been learning the last couple of dafim about what areas of the neck are kosher for shita. We talked about the tabas agdola and the shipui koba and all of that. So basically everything opposite that on the back of the neck would be kosher for malika. So the Gemara says, "Minani mili," where indeed do we know that from? The Tana Rabbanan, it's because we learn in the Braisa. When it says mul orvoy, mul haroya esa orif, it means mul doesn't mean opposite. It means the area next to the orif, the place from which you see the orif, meaning with the back of the neck. The chenu omer who yoshev mi muli, as we find that Balak complains to Bilam and says that the Jewish people are sitting and occupying mi muli. Now he doesn't mean. So what he means is that they're next to me, they're in the lands right next to Moav, and I'm afraid that they're now going to attack me, and therefore I need you to curse me. So we see that the word mul doesn't mean literally on top of, it just means someplace in that area which is visible. After all, Rashi says they weren't literally sitting on Balak, but they were visible to him. So therefore, some mul orpe means the area which is visible to the Oreves. So in other words, it means all that whole back of the neck. Okay. Ba'omer, and we have another pasuk where we see the word odor from the back of the neck. Kifonu ela odor filofonim. Then no, Hashem says to the Navi, the Jewish people are turning the back of their neck to me and not their face. In other words, you do in body language, you turn your face to somebody means you're paying attention to them. You turn your back on them means you want nothing to do with them. So now Hashem is saying to the Navi, the Jewish people are doing that. They're turning their back on me. They don't seem to want to listen to me or have anything to do with me. So we see again that the word odor means the back of the neck. So the Gemara says, Maiva Oimer, why do we need a second pasuk for that? And the reason is, V'chitema, because from the first pasuk, you would say, fine, Mul Orpoi means the area of the Orif, but Orif Gufoi layered in a Hecha. But you wouldn't know from that, where is the Orif itself? Is it the front of the neck, or is it the back? The Neda Mul Bidei Hecha. To know where Mul Orpoi is, you have to first know where Orpoi is. So therefore, so now you have Toshma, now you have the second pasuk, Kifono Ela, Orif Filifonim, they turn their Orif. Rather than their face, to me, Mikal, the Urdif, Hadi Ponim. Now we see, therefore, that Urdif means exactly opposite the face. And now, therefore, Mul Urpoi means beyond that also. So, sorry, I was saying it wrongly before. Urpoi does not mean exactly opposite the face. On the contrary, it means further down the neck. It means further down the neck, which is near the area opposite the face, but not directly. In other words, you think of it in terms of the human skull, for example. The area directly opposite the face would be the back of the skull, but that's not where you would do shita or malika. It would be further down in the neck. So that's mul orpoi. So the Torah calls it mul orpoi, Chazal just call it orpoi. But it means the same thing. So the Gemara says, Amri b'nei Rav Chiya, the sons of Rav Chiya said, their names were Yehuda and Chizkiah. Yehuda comes up occasionally in the Gemara, but it seems he passed away young, so we don't hear from him as much. Chizkiah lived much longer, in particular we find him in many places. He was one of Rav Yechanan's Rebbeim, and we actually find him in many places arguing with Rav Yechanan. So these were the sons of Rav Chiya. The Gemara mentions in other places that they were at very top-level tzaddikim, debate together with Rav Chiya one time, and they were davening by the Amud. They almost wrote Chiyas HaMeisim. So now the sons of Rav Chiya said, Mitzvah Malika Ketzah. What's the proper way of doing Malika? Matzah Simonim La'achore Orif. First, what you should do is get the simonim to be behind the orif. So again, the simonim, the windpipe and the esophagus, especially in a bird where the muscles are not quite as tough, then you're able to move them or stretch them or whatever you do exactly in order to get them behind the orif, to get them behind the spinal cord. And then you do malika, and that way, when you're cutting through them, that way, when the kohen is cutting through them with the fingernail, then he's cutting through them and not yet through the spinal cord and the muscles over there. The ritual brings that maybe even according to the Priya's sons. Maybe in fact you would afterwards have to cut the spinal cord and the spine as well, but the Ritva doesn't like that idea. So according to B'nai Rav Chiya, Malika can be the only difference between them, between Malika, well, not the only difference, but the difference between Malika and Shechita, according to them, is Malika is dafka the back of the neck, like we just said, and also it's done with a fingernail, and it's done mostly, and it's done generally by pressing, although we'll see in the Gemara about that in a little bit, whereas Shechita would be in the front of the neck with a knife and a back and forth motion. But as far as what you're cutting, what you're actually cutting first, B'nai Rav Chiya are saying that in both cases you're cutting the simonim first. Now, what does that mean? Now, there's a machlokas what they meant. Ikadamin afmachzer. One version is that they're saying that that's a valid way to do malika, but not that you have to do that. According to this first way of understanding, they're saying if you were to do that, if you were to move the simonim behind the orif, then that would be fine. But the better way would really be l'chatchila is to cut the spinal cord and the spine first. But if he did it the other way, then fine, that would also be valid. That's point to Rashi. The Ran explains that maybe they mean that both of them are equally kosher hafila. So that's one way of understanding. And the ikadami maksu davka. Another understanding of Bnei Rav Chiya is they're saying you davka have to do that. You cannot cut through the shedra and mafrekas first. And according to that way of looking at it, if you were to do that, in fact, it would be possible, because then you're causing the bird to be a nevela, or trefa, and it wouldn't be a valid malika. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos says that no, everybody would agree, even according to the second version, they would agree that b'dievet, it's kosher. They're just saying, l'chatchila, you should put the simonim behind the neck. So there's several different ways of understanding what B'nai Rav Chiya are saying. However, the Gemara continues, and Mistaber, Commander Amar Asmatsi. Now, it's more logical to accept the opinion that says that it means you could also put them behind, and it's still kosher, according to Rashi, Vidyevet, according to the Ram, maybe even Mahatchila, Mimai, why Mitzkotani? Because our Mishnah had phrased there, Shechit min ha'orif shkutasib sola, you do shchita on the orif, on the back of the neck, then it'll be possible, on molik min ha'orif, on the kosik shera, but if you do it from, if you do it from the back, if you do malika from the back of the neck, it's kosher. Now, the, which we said, actually, it doesn't mean it's kosher b'diyeved, that's the way you're supposed to do it, but the Mishnah had used Mahamoylik for parallelism, but the Isakadaitach, Dafka, but if you're going to tell me that the Meir of Chiyo is saying you must put the simonim behind the neck, behind the neck bone, behind the spine, in order to do the Malika, then if you were going to learn that way, my area Moylik, then why would the Mishnah only be mentioning that if you did Malika, if you did Malika from the back, it would be kosher. After the Shechet Nami, then it would be kosher, even if you did the Shechita that way. As long as the fact is, you cut through the Simonim first. The whole reason why it would be a problem to do Shechita from the Odef is because you're cutting through the spine and the spinal cord before you ever reach the Simonim. But if you put the Simonim behind there, then it would be fine. If the Mishnah is telling us, nevertheless, Shechet Min HaOdef is always possible, and Malika Min HaOdef is kosher, then that has to imply, so the Gemara says, Ela lav shmamina af machzir. So therefore, that implies that the Bnei Reb Chiya are saying that's also that you could put them behind, but either way it would be kosher. Chilu b'diyevet is the case, maybe. So now the Mishnah would be talking about, well, you didn't put the simon in behind the neck, and therefore, in the case of shita, that would be outright possible because you're cutting through the mafrekas first, as opposed to with mulika, that would be fine according to Bnei Reb Chiya. But if you were to say that Bnei Reb Chiya is saying you must put the simon in behind, then the parallelism that the Mishnah is doing doesn't seem to fit, because then, in fact, if you're saying that in order to do a proper malika, you have to put the simonim behind first, then the same thing as far then they're doing the same thing as far as shchita, it would also be kosher. So looking at the wording of the Mishnah, therefore, it must be that way. Tosfos points out, one mistabra, you should say that the version that says you have to put the simonim behind would completely be schlugged up from the Mishnah. Mistabra is only, it's logical. Why is that? So that's why Tosfos explains they're only arguing l'chatchila versus the point of b'diyeh, that it would be kosher either way. So therefore, you can say then that the Mishnah is, so you could say, therefore, that the Mishnah is telling us about how it should be l'chatchila, but that doesn't necessarily impinge on how it would be d'yevet. However, Amar Rabbi Yanai, says, Yikabluho Reuven es Shuvasan. The Reuven should get their answer. In other words, we have a way from the very same Mishnah of slogging up what Rav Chiya's sons are saying. Reuven literally means the young men. The Rashi translates Hanaorim. We find in Aramaic, in Targum, for example, the word Nar is translated Ravia. So Reuven would be the plural of that. With that said, there's a long, interesting explanation that Reuven Margolius has on the subject. He says Reuven may also mean that they came from a place called Roiv or Roiva, and he points out you may have various references to it in various places. You have, first of all, you have one of the later Rabbanon Savaroi, a few hundred years after Bnei Reb Chiya, was named Rabbi Ravai Me Roiv, and that would be they came from the same place, Roiv, but he goes on to explain, Barish, first off, this Roiv is someplace in Turkey, and he points out that there are places where Reb Chiya and his sons are referred to with expressions like Tagumna, which means from Turkey, so then that would mean that they originated in that area, and they originated in the city or the area called Roiv in Turkey, and therefore they were called Haroivin in token of that. In any case, Rabbi Yanai says we can slog them up from our very Mishnah. Dikotani, because our Mishnah continues. Nimsa kosher b'shchita possible malika, kosher b'malika possible shchita, because the Mishnah is saying that whatever is kosher in shchita, namely doing from the front of the neck, would be possible by malika, because malika, as we said, has to be done on the back of the neck. Kosher the malika possible shchita, and vice versa. So now we have to ask. The Mishnah already told us as far as front and back, so there'd be no reason for the Mishnah to have to give us this rule when we can already deduce that from earlier in the Mishnah. So the Mu'uti Mai. So what is the Mishnah coming to exclude with that? Lav the Mu'uti Machzir Simanim Lachayroiref Deloy. Shouldn't it be that the Mishnah is implying with that even if you put the simonim behind the neck, it would not be kosher by malika, but it would be kosher by shchita. So in other words, the Mishnah would be telling us, besides for the whole matter of front and back that we'd be talking about, that we were talking about before, here's another point as well. There can be a case within the back itself where it's kosher by shita and posel by malika, namely if you put the siman in behind the back, behind the spinal cord. And therefore, so that would imply, not like Bnei Rabchia, that there is that you do put them behind, whether Vachatchila or B'diyevet, according to the different versions. So Omer Rav Baba Chana loy, but Rav Baba Chana says no, that's not a valid counter argument against Bnei Rabchia, because when the Mishnah says that rule, it might just mean the Mo'otis Shein V'tzikodin. It might mean to exclude if you do shchita with a knife or with a tooth. Or with a nail, some malika you do with a fingernail, but shchita cannot be done with a fingernail, as we learned a couple of Mishnayos ago. So the Mishnah will be saying kosher b'malika when you're doing malika with a fingernail, which is kosher, and in fact that's the way you're supposed to do it. Possible shchita, but such a thing would be possible for shchita because you can't use an attached fingernail like we learned the other day. By the way, the Mishnah also mentioned the other way around, kosher b'shchita, possible malika. That's just in order to fill things out. Even though there's no chiddush in it. When we mentioned, by the way, a tooth. I mean, you don't use a tooth for malika. You use a fingernail for malika. So why are we even mentioning a tooth? So one point is, we did have a few days ago, we had it mentioned about a tooth and a nail together where they were attached. So therefore, the idea is we'd be mentioning them. Rashi and Tosfos both explain that once we mention a tooth, once we mention a nail, then we also mention a tooth because it was the same kind of thing. We learned them together the other day that because they're attached, then not. Now Rashi also brings another explanation that the earlier Mishnah that we had on Daf Tesavog that mentioned that you can't use a tooth or a nail, Rashi says there are those who want to explain that that would mean that if they're detached, then they're kosher for shchita, but possible for malika. And then here we'd be talking about, and then the Gemara is going to ask now that we already learned that in a previous Mishnah, why would it have to repeat that implication in our Mishnah? So one possibility Rashi says is maybe we would say that in the earlier Mishnah we were talking about detached ones and here we're talking about an attached one. But Rashi says that no, that's not what it means. Then we shouldn't be talking about a tooth or a nail at all. Then the key thing would be, is it attached or detached? Because by the Koyin, by Malika, it has to be an attached fingernail. Tosfos goes and discusses that further, and also Tosfos says that Rashi points out that then there's no reason to ask for the Braisa from the Braisa, but Tosfos discusses and says that still we could uphold that explanation as well. Okay. In any case, point is, now, the Mishnah, when it says that the nimtzeh comes out, what's kosher for shchita is possible by malika, what's kosher for malika is possible by shchita, we'd be talking about, for example, a fingernail. But it doesn't mean, in other words, the Mishnah is not necessarily excluding the case where you put the siman in behind the neck bone. So the Gemara says, shade with tzikorin, behead yekotani, what do you mean? We learned that explicitly in an earlier Mishnah. We said that a tooth or a nail are possible for shchita. So we'd have no reason in our Mishnah to be giving a rule that would just be repeating that point. Different gears there that somebody's showing him have the Mo'oti sat in the Tziporin, that the Gemara is saying that our Mishnah is coming to exclude that you can't use a knife or nail for Malika. So a knife would be just a knife, and a nail would be a detached nail. And again, there's also Rashi points out that the explanation over here that maybe earlier we're talking about a detached one, and Rashi slugs that up, and again Tosfos finds a way to uphold that. In any case, the point is that not necessarily, so therefore, we're back to the question. Our Mishnah would not have to say kosher b'malika, possible b'shchita, and vice versa, if it weren't to tell us about this matter of the simonim. It can't be to tell us about a nail or a tooth, because that we already have from a previous Mishnah. Ela Omer Rabbi Yirmiyah, however, still Rabbi Yirmiyah says there could be a different way to explain the nimsa of our Mishnah. Maybe it means as opposed to a back and forth motion. In other words, the Mishnah would be telling us malika is kosher only if you do a pressing motion into the neck, whereas a shita dafka has to be a back and forth motion. And again, then once we say that, so that kind of case, molech umevi, you back and forth, would be kosher by shita, possible by malika, and that's a chiddush, which we otherwise wouldn't have known. And then incidentally, then it also mentions, and kosher by malika is possible by shita, even though we don't really need to be told that, because we know already that jirasa is possible by shita. We're going to learn all about that in the next page. So therefore, Rabbi Yemiya says that's another thing. You could say the Mishnah is implying with the words nimsa, kosher by malika, possible by shita, and vice versa, and it doesn't necessarily have to be talking anything about this massive simonim business. However, the Gemara says, fine, that works out according to the opinion that if you do malika with a back and forth motion, it would be possible. But there is an opinion that it's kosher, that as long as the kohen is doing it on the back of the neck, and as long as he's using his fingernail, then it doesn't matter whether he presses or whether he does a back and forth motion with it. So my filmema, then what are you going to say? Then what would be the point of the nimsa in our Mishnah, if it weren't as Rav Yana is saying to tell us that with Machzor Simonim there can be a case where it's kosher by shita and possible by malika, and then that would again contradict Bnei Rapia. And the answer is no, because Bnei Rapia started with Malika Moelachamayim, when Malika possible, they hold like the opinion that says that Malika would be possible if you do a back and forth motion. According to them, the only valid way to do Malika would be with a pressing motion, and therefore, according to them, when the Mishnah says, so there's the flow of the Mishnah, then according to them, would be as follows. Not the flow of the Mishnah, but the last statement of the Mishnah, Nimsa, Kosibish, Koshibish, Shitta, possible Malika, would not be telling us about places on the neck, that already we know from earlier in the Mishnah, but rather it would be telling us that when it comes to Shitta, it has to be a back and forth motion, and when it comes to Malika, it has to be a pressing motion. But the Mishnah would not be referring to the case of Machzor Simonim, and according to Bnei Rapia, in fact, you could be Machzor Simonim, or you have to, according to the different versions on the bottom of the previous Amud, of what Bnei Rapia holds. Okay. So the Gemara explains in this connection, Amar Kana mitzvah malika koitza tviyodid, the proper way of doing malika is that you press through without doing a back and forth motion, you cut through and you cut through the spine and the spinal cord and the simonim vizuri mitzvah, and that's the proper way of doing the mitzvah. Again, we're going to talk about later on Daf Chafalef, we're going to talk about that maybe not necessarily you just do it straight through, maybe you have to make sure, we're going to talk about that you have to not cut through too many of the muscles, otherwise again the bird becomes nevela before you ever reach the symphonim. Anyway, Savar of Omen the Maimon, Rab Ovin, when he heard what Rav Kahana said, he thought to say, Kotz v'yored ein, that Rav Kahana only means that it's only kosher, only if you press. Molech umevi loy, but it would not be kosher by Malika if you do a back and forth motion. But Rabbi Yemiya says no. That tells him kosher can the molech umevi malika kosher. All the more so that it should be kosher by malika, because fine, the Torah is telling us that there are certain ways in which malika is different than shita. It's in the back of the neck, whereas malika is in the back of the neck, shita in the front. Malika can't be done. Malika is done with an attached fingernail. Shita cannot. But we would assume, says Rabbi Yemiya, that other than that, anything unspecified than shita and malika should be as similar as possible. So the same way as shita has to be done back and forth, the same way malika can at least be done back and forth. In fact, the Rashba says that actually what it would be better to do is do back and forth, and this way when you reach the simonim, the bird will still be alive. If you were to press and therefore the animal and then therefore the bird in effect gets strangled before you finish, then that's also fine because like Rashi said before, it is part of the whole process of malika. But nevertheless, Rabbi Yemiya would say all the better if you do back and forth where therefore you're avoiding that issue. Well, my zuri mitzvasa. So what is Rav Kahana when he says this is the mitzvah? He just means ema af zuri mitzvasa. He means that's also the valid way of doing it, to press. But in fact, says Rabbi Yemiya, it would be kosher if it was back and forth as well. And that's how the Rambam passes in Zalocha. It is in fact with malika, it is kosher either way. Okay. Now let's talk about, we said in the Mishnah that And we said in the Mishnah that the area of the neck that's kosher for shchita is possible for malika and vice versa. So let's talk more detail about that. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Yumi, Amar Shmuel, kol kosher b'shchita, any part of the front of the neck which was kosher for shchita, as we were talking about before, where the upper part of it is tabas agdola, all the part of it, or above that, and the shibui kova and all that. Below, we didn't really get into how far below you can, but it's basically until you reach the area of the lungs. We also didn't really talk yet about the part of the esophagus that's valid for shritta, but whatever. The point is, in other words, there's a certain area of the neck, which is kosher for shritta. So Rabbi Yumi, it tells us in the name of Shmuel, connected by Otis, the equivalent part, the parallel part, on the back of the neck, kosher to malika would be kosher when it comes to malika. So Rashi points out like this. Shmuel is not coming to tell us the halachas of shchita, because what is Shmuel telling us? He's saying that anything that's kosher by shchita, then parallel to it would be kosher by malika. What about all these other details that we were mentioning before? What about going back and forth? What about using something attached or detached, etc.? So no, Shmuel is not talking about the dinim of shchita. Shmuel is just talking about what area of the neck is valid for shchita. So you should realize that, says Shmuel, that whatever area of the neck is valid for shchita is the area which opposite it is valid from is valid from malika. So the Gemara said, hawk, possible shchita, possible malika. Okay, so the implication seems to be that Shmuel was saying that an area of the front of the neck, which is possible for shchita, that parallel area on the back would also be possible for malika. Well, we have to ask for malika. Well, what is Shmuel coming to exclude with it? Now, it can't be that he just means that you can't do it too high up or too low down, because we know that already. We said at the beginning of the sugya that since the pasuk is mimul orpoi, and we said odaf itself, literally in Torah terminology, means the area directly opposite the face, and then mul orpoi means the area next to that, then obviously, therefore, it means you can only shecht within, we can only do malika within that area, and if you did it outside of that, then it would be possible. So what is Shmuel coming to tell us with his deal? So Mu'uti Mai, Ilang Lamu'uti Iko Simonim. Maybe Shmuel wants to tell us that it would be possible if the Simonim were ripped out. Now there's two major ways of explaining the concept of Iko Simonim. So like this. First of all, we talked about before that one of the five things that passes Shita is in fact called Ikur. There's two possibilities. Ikur can mean tearing through. So that would include, for example, what we were talking about a few days ago about a knife with a nick or whatever, where you're tearing the simonim rather than cutting them. So that would be, so that's no good. But another point of ikur is also the windpipe and the esophagus are both held in place by various muscles and ligaments and whatnot. So ikur would be where they're torn out of their place and they're loose inside the neck. So now, Shmuel is telling us that if one of the simonim is detached from its moorings in the animal before the shchita, in the bird, before the shchita is completed, then it would be possible. So in fact, Tosfos over here and earlier in the Perek discusses in detail over here about these two possible meanings of ikur, in fact, the bird Tosfos brings from the Bahad, from the Halachas Berulos, that Ikur would be, in other words, exactly that it's detached from its place and then you shecht it. Whereas Rashi, Tosfos explained over there that Rashi held that would make the animal or the bird treifa, and it's not a matter of whether it's a shchita, a valid shchita anyway, because in any case, the bird or the animal is treifa as a result of that. There's quite a bit of discussion in our Gemara over here what exactly we mean by ikur. So if you're going to say that it means ikur simonim, well, Tony, Rami Bar Yechezkel in ikur simonim ba'oif. Didn't Rami Bar Yechezkel teach a braisa that says that there's no psul of ikur simonim when it comes to a bird? If the simonim are torn out of their place, then you can still do a valid shchita on the bird, as we will talk about soon in the Gemara. Why should that be? So therefore, so it means that so even shlita would be kosher for that. Malika would certainly be good. So what is Shmuel saying that any time that what does Shmuel mean when he says anything that's kosher by shlita, then the parallel thing in the back of the neck will be kosher by malika. He can't be referring to ikru simanim. So the Papa says, in fact, it does come to exclude the head. The same way as if you shecht in the head, then it's possible. And the head, as we defined before, is above a certain part of the windpipe, is already considered the head. Then the same way over here, with the bird and malika, it would be the same kind. It would be the same kind of thing. So the Gemara says, Roshet Pshita. Well, of course, if you do Malika in the head, it's possibly Mulorpoi. Amar Achman of the Torah says Mulorpoi. And as we talked about before, the lawyer, that means Zafka, the area, Orpoi, we said means the part of the neck, the part of the back of the head, directly opposite the face, and Mulorpoi would be below that. And then obviously, the Torah is telling you have to do Mulorpoi below the Roshet, not in the head of it. So the answer is, my roshoy, shipui roshoy. The answer is, when Rapapa uses the word roshoy, he means shipui roshoy, the slanted part of the head. Now there's two explanations. Do we mean the slanted part of the head, as in other words, in the sense, if you look at a bird, you'll find there's a point when the, Rashi explains it means exactly that. When the head starts slanting, it can also mean, Rashi says it means that if he did a diagonal cut. So therefore, so it can mean that the Rabbi Shonim who learned that Shipui Roshoy would be the same as the Shipui Koiva that we were talking about the last couple of dafim, the slanted part of the thyroid cartilage, and therefore it would mean if you did Malika anything above that, then it would be possible. The same way as if you do Shita any place above that, it would be possible. So what does he mean? To go and knock at me Shipui Roshoy. Suppose that he starts doing the Malika at the point of Shipui Roshoy, at this too high point, either at the place where the head is sloping or in the place where the thyroid cartilage is sloping, the higrin, then he inclined it and he continued cutting on a diagonal with his fingernail, but also at the mati tatori, and he continues downward until he reaches a correct area in the neck for the malika. So nevertheless, Shmuel says that now, when it comes to shlita, that such a thing would be, with shlita, such a thing would be possible, even though most of it was done correctly, but by malika that would be okay. Chidr Rav Huna, Amar Rav Asi, namely, like what we learned before about Rav Huna, says in the name of the Chidr Rav Huna, Amar Rav Asi, Damar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Asi, Higrim Shlish, Veshachat Shnei Shlish, Psula, that if he were to start out in the wrong place for shlita, and do only one third of the shlita, too high up or too low down, and then he did two thirds in the proper place of the shkita, then he said that Rav Huna had said in the name of Rav Asi that it would be possible. So Shmuel is not saying it's kosher in the case of Malika, on the contrary. Shmuel is saying anything that's kosher by shkita, kineged ba'odah, the parallel thing on the back of the neck, is kosher by Malika, but not if it's possible by shkita. Meaning the same way as Rav Huna had told us that if you do hagrama at the beginning of the Malika, then it would be, at the beginning of the shkita, it would be possible, even though you did most of it in a kosher way. The same way Shmuel would say with Malika, it's the same thing. It's not good enough that most of the Malika was done in the proper part of the neck. Mulorpoi, it has to be the entire thing was done over there, and therefore you can't start out with Hagroma. You can't start it by doing it in the wrong place and then continue. Meaning, in other words, it actually explains, again, if you did most of it in that area, of course it would be possible, then the Torah clearly says, but it means you only did a minority, but nevertheless, the same way as Shmuel holds, that would be possible by Shlita, where again, we learned yesterday, various opinions about that, whether in fact it would be possible or not, but Shmuel holds like the opinion that it would, so the same way he would say it's possible, he would say it's possible by Malika as well. Now, we said before that Rabbi Bar Yechezkel had brought a braisa that said ein ikur simonim ba'oif, that the concept of ikur simonim does not apply to a bird. So let's analyze that. Omelet of Achabre de Rav Larashi, Chodetoni, Rami Bar Yechezkel, ein ikur simonim ba'oif, when he's saying that ikur simonim does not apply to a bird, where again, ikur simonim would mean then that the simonim are torn out of their place and hanging loose and not attached by their muscles and ligaments anymore. That would only work according to the opinion that was mentioned earlier in the Perek briefly, and we're going to have more detail about it. We're going to have more detail about it in the next Perek. There is an opinion that a bird does not require shittim in our Torah, only in the Dirabanan. So in other words, according to that way of looking at it, Rashi explains in the next Perek that you do have to do some kind of cutting the simanim. Now, it doesn't have to be a proper shita. It can be nechira, like we talked about the other day, like cutting through, cutting them through in a different way or whatever. But according to that way of looking at it, you don't need a proper shita on a bird, only dirabanan, as long as you cut the simanim somehow. So then, in that case, so now we could say then that the Chachamim, when they said that you do have to do shita by a bird, they would say that ikur simonim doesn't matter. Even if the simonim are torn loose from their places, then it wouldn't matter, and it's still kosher. A logical reason to draw the distinction, the Ran explains, because again, there really are two types of ikur. One where the simonim are torn from their place before the shita, or the other one that you did an improper shita and then cut with a nick knife or whatever and ripped the simonim. So that kind of thing maybe wouldn't apply to a bird. The other four things, shihiyah, derosa, halada, and hagrama, all of which apply dafka during the shita, then when the Chachamim made the takana of doing the shita for a bird, then they would also include those four things as well. So the Rami by Yechezkel's statement then could only work according to that opinion. But if he said that a bird requires shita in Atara, then the same way as any shita requires five things, one of them being that there shouldn't be ikur, then it would have to apply to a bird as well. But continues Rav Acha Brei de Rava, Aval Amanda Amad Yesh Shita Va'ofen HaTorah, the opinion that says that a bird does in fact require shita min HaTorah. Now we have to realize when the Pasuk mentions the concept of shita, it never actually mentions a bird in that connection. The Torah says v'zavachta mitkorcho mitzoncha. You can check from your cattle or your flocks. So therefore, there's room for an opinion that a bird doesn't require shita min HaTorah. Then there's a different explanation, which we're going to learn in the next parak, that we have a different explanation that says that in fact that halacha of Moshe Sinai is that birds do require shita. So according to that way of looking at it, how could Rami Bar Yechezkel's statement work? Why should ikur simonim not apply to a bird no less than it does to an animal? On the other hand, Omalei, but Ravashi answers him, Adrabe Ifcha Mistabra. On the contrary, you can argue it's more logical the other way around. Lamanda, Omal Yesh Shitava Open Atorah, the opinion that says that a bird has to be shechted on a Daraisa level, on a Lachal Moshe Mishinem level, you would say, Ikulamema, so you could say, the Hochi Agmere, you could say, when Hashem taught this din to Moshe, that birds require shechta, this is how he taught him. The Ein Ikur, that Ikur Simonim, that one particular detail does not apply to a bird. Vaftila Lamanda Omal Kibahema, even the opinion that says later on, now when we learn in the next parak about this matter of shechting birds, we're going to learn there's a few different ways of learning if we say that a bird is required to have shittim in HaTorah. What is that? You have one opinion again that's halacha l'moshe Sinai, and then you have another opinion that we actually derive it from a wording in a pasuk, namely from a hekesh with an animal. Even an opinion that says that we learn it from a hekesh with animals, because it says zois a behema, you could say you could say that still the Torah is still not implying that when it comes to ikur, it should have to be like an animal. Maybe not, in other words. You're learning from a hekesh, but the fact is, you can't learn a hekesh by yourself. A hekesh has to be something that you learn from your Rebbe. So you could say that your Rebbe, and who learned from his Rebbe, etc., all the way back. From Moshe Sinai learned that the hekesh does not include the point about ikur simonim. So if you say that a bird requires shchitim and atorah, whether as halacha l'moshe Sinai or whether from a pasuk, you can say that there's an exception for ikur simonim. Ever l'mando amein shchitim la'osmin atorah l'medivas sofin. But if you're going to tell me, says Rav Ashi to Rav Acha Brei de Rava, that the whole concept of shechting birds is only medrabanan mehechig mila, after all, where would they be learning b'chlal the concept that a bird should require shchita and make that takana mi behema? They would be learning it from an animal. Well, kula milsa ki behema. Well, then more logically, they would say the entire thing would be like an animal, and they would not make an exception for ikur. So not like the svara that the Ran had said in Yeracha Brei de Rava's explanation, that we would say that there's two types of ikur, and therefore we're not going to apply either of them to a bird, because one of them can happen before shchita. Rav Ashi says there's no reason to say that. If the Chachamim are going to impose the halachas of shchita on a bird, then we're going to say that it means all five things, including the concept of ikur, whatever ikur means. So therefore, said Rashi says, on the contrary, Rami Bar Yechezkel's statement works much better if we do say that a brood does require shittim and atzeret. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Omer Ravina, Omer Rovin Bar Kisi, Hodetani Rami Bar Yechezkel, Ein Ikus Simonim Ba'oiv. Now, there is a detail in that. When Rami Bar Yechezkel says that Ikus Simonim does not apply to a brood, Lo Yamorin Elab Malika. That would only apply, though, when it comes to Malika. So even if the simonim were torn out, or even if they were ripped in the course of the malika, then it doesn't matter. It doesn't passel it. Actually, the ra'ah points out that not that if they were detached from their proper places before the malika, then in fact it would be passel, even according to this opinion. Only if it means during the malika itself, if they were ripped through rather than a clean cut, then it would still be fine. But when it comes to shchita, ikur simonim would apply to a brood as well. So the Gemara says, why? Didn't we say before that whatever part of whatever way of shchita is kosher as far as the neck, then the parallel part on the back of the neck is kosher by malika? Ha posel, implying, as we said on Amud Aleph, that what's posel by one is posel by the other. Well then, if ikur simonim is posel by malika, then it is posel by shchita, then it's posel by malika as well. Where are you getting the idea? Where are you getting the idea that there should be a distinction and say that ikur simonim by a bird is fine by malika, but by shita it's kosher? Where do you get that? And what says fine? Ahu pliga, fine. Rabbi Yumia is obviously arguing with Rovin Bar Kisi. He would say that Rami Bar Yechezkel's rule applies to both shita and malika. By neither of them is ikur a problem. But on the other hand, Rovin Bar Kisi holds that there is a difference. It's not a problem by Malika, but it is a problem. It is a problem by Shita. Fine, so two different opinions. Rashi goes on to say in some detail over here, the halacha cannot be like Rami by Yechezkel, because in the next parak, we have a case where, for example, the person shefted through the esophagus, and then there went, and then the windpipe was torn out of place. Then it'll be kosher, but not the other way around. And we have various cases over there where one or the other simonim is detached from its place and not attached properly by its muscles and ligaments. And we even say over there that any suffix by shchita is possible. So we see that whole concept applies to a bird because what are we saying over there? Rashi explains, when we said if he shechted the esophagus and then the windpipe was torn out of place, there would be kosher. Why would that be? If we're talking about an animal, you have to shecht through both of them. Necessarily, it has to be talking about a bird where you only need to shecht one simon. So once you shechted one simon, we don't care what happens to the other one. So therefore we see clearly from that brisa that would only work by a bird, but still you have cases over there where it does mention ikur would be possible, namely where the ikur took place before the shritta, and therefore it would be possible. So you see therefore that ikur in fact is relevant to a bird and not like Rami Bar Yechezkel says that's not. Rashi goes on to say, okay, so you have two brisas, one against the other, but still fine, you can say that the two brises represent the different opinions whether a brood requires shchita minatorah. And Rashi says in that case, then we have a suffix, and when it comes to a din minatorah, then we have to go according to them, we have to be machmir, and therefore we would after all have to say that ikur simonim does apply to a brood as well, because we can't be sure which one the halacha would be like. We do accept the distinction that the Gemara made over here between Shchita and Malika. We do, in the Rambam, when he brings the halachas and Malika, says that it does bring Rami Bar Yechezkel's Braisa, because we have nothing against that. The Braisa that we're talking about in the next Perek that talks about Ikur is talking about Shchita, not about Malika, so we can still be left with that Rami Bar Yechezkel's statement is valid, but only as far as Malika, and therefore, if the simon was torn, rather than being cut, if it was dislocated from its place, then it'll still be fine as far as malika. But as far as shita, as the saying over here, not, because we can't be sure whether such a thing would be allowed or not. Okay. The Gemara says, continuing on this topic of valid shita, and this is going to go back to this matter of malika, as far as the order that malika is done, what's cut in the next verse. So the Gemara says, Omaziiv, Nishpura Mafrekas, if the neck bone of an animal or bird is broken, Mafrekas, by the way, comes from the word perek, which means a section. The Mafrekas is so called because it's made up of a bunch of small vertebrae, one on top of the other. So it's made out of like trucking. It's made up of sections, one on top of the other, which of course is necessary in order for the neck to be flexible so that you can, so a person or an animal or a bird can turn its neck. Birds, in fact, have an even most many birds have a greater ability to turn their neck in more directions even than people and animals do, and therefore the neck bone is called mafrekas. So now he says if the mafrekas is broken, the roi boso ima, and together with it most of the muscles have also been broken or cut through nevela, then the animal or the brute is right away nevela. So it's not even a matter of that it's a trefa, it's an outright nevela, meaning in other words that if you touch it or carry it, then you're gonna become tum. The post can talk about even nowadays that we don't have Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara, there isn't necessarily such a distinction between Nevela and Treifa, although there is brought a possible nafkamina nowadays between Nevela and Treifa in particular as far as dinim of if you shechted it afterwards, can a goy eat from the meat right away? If you say that the animal is a trefa, fine. Not only is a goy allowed to eat a trefa, but then you'd be allowed to shecht it and he'd be allowed to eat from it right away, as opposed to if it's nevela, then not, because then you'd have to wait till the animal is completely dead. Post can talk about a situation involving that. In any case, so Zeevi is saying that if the mafrekas was broken and most of the muscles around it as well, then automatically the animal, the brood, is nevela, and it's not even a matter of that you can do a proper shittah with it. Tosfos discusses later on in the Masechta that maybe it means not just that mafrekas was broken, maybe it would actually have to be that the spinal cord was broken as well. And then different Rishonim and Achronim talk about that. Whether in fact that's necessary or whether in fact the Nevela rule would apply, even if only the spine, or even if only the neck bone was broken and not even the spinal cord. Omer Chista Afan Nami Tanena. So Rav Chista says, in fact, we see this from our Mishnah. Because we said that Malika has to be, or not our Mishnah, we learn in a Braisa, Molok Vesakin Matam Begodim, Abes Abliya. If you did Malika on a bird with a knife instead of with the Kohen's fingernail like you're supposed to, so the result is the bird becomes Nevela, because again, it's not a proper Shkita because you didn't do it in the front of the neck, and it's not a proper Malika because Malika is done with a fingernail, so it becomes Nevela, Matam Begodim, Abes Abliya. Then the din of the Nevela of a bird will apply, namely, we learned about it in Zvachim. We're going to learn in various places in our Masechta that if a person swallows a kazayis of such a dead bird, then he becomes tuma and his clothing becomes tuma. He himself, in other words, becomes an ava tuma and his clothing becomes a rishon l'tuma. So we see now, says Rav Chista, if you were going to say that cutting through the mafrekas and most of the muscles makes it only a trefa and not an avela, so what's the problem? Still, you could say that malika should be in the equivalent of shchita. After all, he did cut through the simonim. Okay, it became a trefa, but fine. Tahani lo, tahani la sakin, latara min nevela. At least the knife should be effective enough to make it that's not going to be considered an avela. Fine, it'll be considered a trefa. So you can't eat it, but it wouldn't be a nevela, and this concept of metamah begodim abeis abliya would not apply. But the fact that we don't say that, the fact that we say it is metamah begodim abeis abliya, proves what Zeiri is saying. The problem is over here, you cut through the back of the neck, so you cut through the mafrekas and most of the muscles. Now, by the time you reach the simonim, the bird is a nevela, and therefore the malika doesn't help. And therefore, so now, if a person eats that bird, then he becomes tamer. So you have a proof to what Zeiri is saying. However, the Gemara says, Ami, the Bnei Yeshiva said, that's not really a proof. Rashi explains then that it's not so much of Chista bringing a proof to Zeiri, it's more that he's asking a question. Given that we have this Braisa, then what is Zeiri's Chiddush? So, By the way, Rashi brings up some length over here about this matter of the dead bird. Where exactly we learn the details of being the tame, and then how we know that it applies only to a bird, and so on and so forth. Rashi goes through the whole limud of how we know it exactly. The point is, unlike a dead animal, which is matame, a person who touches or carries it, a dead bird is not matame. In that way, the only way in which matame is the person swallows it. So Rashi explains that Rav Chista is asking Am Ze'iri, what's the chidush of what he's saying? We learn this very clearly in a braisa. On the other hand, there are Mefoshim who say that Rav Chista is not asking a question. On the contrary, he's showing a proof from the braisa from the braisa to what Ze'iri is saying. So the answer that's not really a valid question or a valid proof. Because the fact is, in that case, it's not a shchita at all. It's not a shchita because it's being done on the back of the neck. So you could maybe say that normally cutting through the mafrekis and most of the muscle does not necessarily make it a nevela. But over here you would say, so why doesn't the shchita at least allow it to not be nevela? No, you'd say it does make it nevela. The fact that over there you're saying that you're saying it's not a shchita. Had it been something that could be called a shchita, then you're right, the animal wouldn't be nevela. But because you can't possibly call such a thing a shchita in the first place, because by definition shchita is not in the back of the neck, then therefore that shchita does not save it from being nevela, and the result is that it is in fact matame, the person. So the question is, my timer, well, why not? Is it just the fact that it's the back of the neck? Rav Huna Amar Mishu Machlid. Rav Huna says, so it's not just the fact that it's the back of the neck. Why not? I was saying it wrong. It is true that it's on the back of the neck, but nevertheless, that's not enough reason to completely say that it's not a shchita at all. There must be a different reason why we don't consider using a knife to be a shchita on the back of the neck, to be a shchita at all, to the point where we would say that the bird is actually considered an avela. So why not? Rav Huna Amar Mpneshu Machlid. Rav Huna says because then you're doing chaloda, which is another one of the things that makes the shchita kosher. Chaloda means chaloda comes from the word chulda, which means, as the Gemara is going to say in a couple of lines, that chaloda comes from the word chulda, which means a weasel or some kind of creature like that that hides out in the house. So chaloda is when the knife is hidden during the shchita. So now what happens is, it actually explains, when you're cutting through the neck bone, now the knife is hidden under the bone. Because unlike when we learned before that if you cut through the simanim, then the muscle tone, or the fact that you cut through the muscles, which until now were under tension, that causes them to get a gap to form. But by the bones, you don't have that because the bones are solid. So therefore the result is that the knife is actually hidden under the bone, and therefore, so now you have a problem of chaloda. Tosfos points out that would only work if you were using a very small knife. If you're using a larger knife, then you wouldn't have a problem because the sides of the knife stick out beyond that anyway, and therefore wouldn't it be a problem. Tosfos gives a different explanation. It's called chaloda because you're shechting in the wrong direction. The simanim are supposed to be cut from front to back, and you're instead cutting them from back to front. Then Tosfos also brings that in the next perek, Rashi gives a different definition, or no, not over here, in Zvachim rather, that it would be considered chaloda in the sense that you're not using the width of the knife precisely because you don't want to cut through too many of the muscles. You're going to use the point of the knife, and that would be another example of chaloda, but Tosfos says it in the context of our Sylvia, that explanation doesn't work. So again, according to Rashi, the problem is that the knife is covered, assuming, as Tosfos says, that we're talking about a small knife, gets completely covered up by the bone, whereas according to Tosfos, the vote is that you're doing the shchita of the simanim in the wrong direction. You're doing them from back to front instead of front to back. So therefore, Rav Huna says that's a reason why to say that cannot even be considered a shchita, aside from the fact that it's the back of the neck. On top of that, you have this problem of chaloda as well. Rava Amrim Nishu Doris. Rava says, because we're talking about over here, where you use the knife and you press rather than cutting back and forth. Then again, Durotha is one of the things that passes shchita, so therefore we can't consider it a shchita at all. So either way, then the point is that therefore this bird cannot be considered to have undergone anything like shita. Therefore, it's just considered an avela, and therefore it's matame a person who swallows it. On the other hand, though, that doesn't necessarily back up what Ze'iri is saying, because maybe in this particular case we would say that we would have thought that it's a shita. Nevertheless, it doesn't. But we would say that maybe where there was something that could be considered a proper shita, maybe in fact if everything else was kosher and the only problem is that he's doing it from the back of the neck, then maybe in fact it would be considered enough of a shita to save it from being nevela. Well, the Gemara says, why do we have two opinions? Manda Omer Mpnei Shu Machlid Rav Huna, who holds the problem is that it's Chalada, my time, like Omer Mpnei Shu Dirdus. Why did he say the problem with using a knife from Malika is that you're pressing? And the reason is, because like we said on Amin Aleph, Chasavim, Malik maybe be Malika Kosher. Because he holds that Malika could also be done with a back and forth motion, so Malak the second doesn't necessarily mean that he did Malika. By pressing, he could have equally well done the Malika with a knife, or not really Malika, but so to speak, Malika by moving the knife back and forth. So therefore, that's not a reason to call it not a shita. Umanda Omer Mpnei Shu Dirdus, my time and my Omer Mpnei Shu Machlid. What about Rava? Why doesn't he accept Rav Huna's answer? Amalach, and the reason is Rava tells you Chalada Heichi Damin, because what's the definition of Chalada? The Chulda Hadara, the Ikra and Batim, because Chalada comes from the word Chulda, which is like a weasel or a mouse or something that lives in the basements of houses, in the holes of houses. The Mekasia is completely covered; it hides out. So therefore, Chalada is when the knife is completely hidden. But the fact is over here, the knife itself is visible throughout the shita. You just have, there's a period, there's a point where it's covered up by the bone. So therefore, that's not a reason enough to consider it a possible shita. Okay, however, Rava says, however, says Rava, if I have a question on what Ze'iri said, then my question is as follows. Meaning, in other words, that Rashi learns that before, when Rav Chisda brought the Braisa about Moloch the Sakin, then he was doing that to it's a Mishnah in Zvachim. So he had brought it as a question on Ze'iri. Given that we say that in the Mishnah, why does Ze'iri need to say this statement? So Rava is saying that's not a valid question on Ze'iri. However, I do have a different valid question on what Ze'iri is saying. If we say that before Rav Chisda was trying to bring a proof to Ze'iri, then Rava is pointing out that in that case, then now I have a question. Fine, you have a Mishnah there that seems to back up Ze'iri, but I have a different question which seems to contradict Ze'iri. The question is, what do you mean? Ze'iri is telling us that if you cut through the mafrekas and most of the muscles around it, then the bird is nevela. So what, once the bird is dead, you're going to go do Malika? That's not, Malika is supposed to be a live bird. So you've already killed the animal by doing the mafrekas. So what's the point then of cutting through the simani? Omale Abaya says, the kikshiloch oila sa'if, the boya shnei simonim. Well, you might as well ask the question about an oila sa'if, which as we learned in Zvachim, unlike by a chata sa'if, where you cut through only one simon, by an oila sa'if you have to cut through both simonim. Now, the fact is, now, with a bird, when it comes to shita, you only need to chef one simen, because a bird has less chayus than an animal, and therefore you cut one simen and the bird's already dead. And yet we see by an oila sa'if, you have to cut through both of them. You could ask the same thing. What's the point of doing malika when the bird's already dead? But obviously you don't have a problem. Obviously you don't have a problem with that. So why should you have a problem with the same thing if malika, where you need to do one or two simonim, as the case may be, that maybe the bird is already dead there based on what Ze'iri is saying. Amalei said, Rava says, Hosel kedel kaima mitzvah Abdullah. The difference is because there, fine, the bird's already dead after you do the one simon, but you have a mitzvah. The Torah tells us by an oil soif that he should divide the head from the body. The pasuk says over there. That the positive says over there that he has to divide the head from the body. So that means, in other words, that at least you have to cut through both simonim. So fine, maybe the bird is dead already, but the same way as you have other procedures that have to be done with the oil soif after it's dead. So this is another procedure that the Torah is telling you to do. The Torah is telling you, actually, it doesn't actually say in so many words, Abdullah, but it says that you have to burn the head and the body separately on the Mizbeach, and therefore, of necessity, that means that you have to set the thing. So that doesn't mean, though, that's part of the mitzvah of killing the bird. But when it comes to malika of a chata sa'if, where you don't have, in fact, the Torah says by a chata sa'if, the lo yavdil, that he shouldn't divide the head from the body, So what's the point of doing the lika of any simon at all when already according to Zairi the brute is dead by having cut through the mafrekas and most of the muscles? So that's Rava's problem with what Zairi is saying. According to Zairi, the brute is already dead by that point. What's the point of malik? Well, the Gemara asks the Hachi Ur. Well, then when it comes to an Ola Sa'if, it should be not enough to just cut through the two simanim. You should actually have to cut through the skin as well and completely separate the head from the body. And the fact is, you don't necessarily need to do that. And the answer is no, because the rule would be called a ma'akav b'shita. Anything that is ma'akav, when it comes to shita, ma'akav b'abdallah. That same procedure, if it wasn't done by Abdullah, is ma'akav. V'cholsha ain't a ma'akav b'shita, ain't a ma'akav b'abdallah. Now, anything that doesn't prevent the shita from being valid, doesn't prevent the Abdullah from being valid as well. Now, the fact is, the skin of the neck has nothing to do with the shchita as well. Even if all that skin was missing before the shchita, the animal would still be kosher. Later on, in fact, actually, we have in the third parak, when we talk about the dinim of tshreifus, we're going to talk about an animal that has lost skin for whatever reason, where it can be missing a large amount of its skin and still be perfectly kosher. So the skin on the neck can actually be missing, and the animal is perfectly kosher, and the shchita will be fine. So having to cut through the skin over here, even if he didn't do it, the korban will still be kosher. But when it comes to the simonim, fine, you only buy a brood, you only have to shech through one simon, but both simonim have to be present over there. And after all, you are supposed to cut through all of them. The diyeved, by a brood, you cut through only one of them, or most of one of them, then the shchita is kosher. But you are supposed to cut through both of them. So the rule would be that the skin we don't care about, but the simonim we do. So now, Rava's question is, again, that if you're telling me, Zairi, that by the time you reach the simonim, the brood's already dead anyway, then what's the point? So the Gemara says, what about though? Again, we're saying that the minority of the simonim, if you check through most of both simonim, and according to the Rabbanan, that we're going to learn later on in the Sugya, they hold you are supposed to cut through them by Malika as well. They're not Ma'akiv by Shita, because the fact is you cut through most of the simonim, then the bird is kosher. Or Ma'akli b'Avdala, and yet the Chachamim say later on in our Sugya on Kofala from a day that when it comes to an Ola Sa'if, you are supposed to actually separate, meaning cut through both Simonim and cut them through completely. So that rule of that formulation of the rule of Rava's does not work. You're right. What Rava means to say is kosher yeshne b'shchita yeshne b'Avdala. Whatever applies to Shchita applies to Avdala. So fine, it doesn't have to be Ma'akiv. Because again, once you cut through most of the simonim, it's a kosher shchita. But when it comes to malika of an ola sa'if, you have to go through the whole thing. Fine. But what at least you have, the simonim are involved in shchita. And therefore, they're also involved in Abdallah. Anything that's not involved in shchita is not involved in Abdallah. And therefore, the skin is not at all involved in shchita. And therefore, there wouldn't be any kind of rule that you have to cut through the skin and physically remove the head and the body in order for the malika to be kosher. But nevertheless, though, so Rava's question still stands. In other words, how do we do the malika in a valid way? According to Zairi, by the time we reach the simonim, we've cut through the shedra and mafrekas, we've cut through the mafrekas and roiv boser, and already at that point the brood is available. Now we do have what we learned before, that bnei Rav Chiya, that they would say that you put the simonim behind the neck, what we said over there, even according to them, according to one version of them, we didn't have to do that, we just could do that, and according to the other version, we were saying that only b'diyevet if you did that is it kosher? But still, how would all this fit with Zairi's point that if you cut the mafrekas and roiv boser, then the brood is already nevela? We're gonna have to answer the question, and we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem and the Gemara, with answering that question: how exactly we do the malika to avoid that issue.